Today's Survivor Podcast is sponsored by The Great Courses. The Great Courses is fantastic. They don't call it The Great Courses for nothing, because The Great Courses allows you to learn about so many different things, whether it's an interest or something that from history that you want to get to know more about. And The Great Courses allows you to be able to learn at your own pace just for the pure pleasure of it. That's why I'm very excited about something new from The Great Courses, which is The Great Courses Plus video learning service. It's unlimited access to thousands of videos on fascinating subjects. They've got over 5,000 video lectures, including history, science, photography, cooking, and more, all taught by award-winning professors and experts from National Geographic, Smithsonian, and the Culinary Institute of America. And with The Great Courses Plus, you can watch as many different lectures as you want, anytime, anywhere, on your TV, laptop, tablet, or phone. So RHAP listeners can get a new introductory offer into The Great Courses Plus free for 1 month. The Great Courses series are normally priced at between $200 and $300 each, but now you can get unlimited access to the entire Great Courses Plus library completely free for 1 month. I know you're going to love The Great Courses Plus, so sign up now for your free 1 month trial. Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/RHAP. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/RHAP. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cisterna here, back to talk about why the latest player voted out of Survivor lost the game. And here with me every week to talk about this is the great David Bloomberg. David, how are you?
I'm good. Thinking less about baseball these days than last week.
It was a fast week.
But as a Cubs fan, I'm used to baseball being over sometime in like July. Yeah. So the fact that it went to October was pretty good. And I actually had got last minute tickets to go to game three in Chicago. I ran out of work and drove up there, you know, the 3 hours, took an hour's worth of train, got great seats, and watched an not so great game.
It was a back and forth game for a while there up until the later innings. And while I'm very happy about my Mets, you know, I take no pleasure in the disappointment of the Cubs fans. I know that you guys are really have been through a lot, and I really do feel like it's going to come together for the Cubs very soon.
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate that. I know that, there are very few people who take pleasure in seeing the other team lose. But I've seen a few of those people, especially living where I do. Well, yeah. You'd be surprised, actually, how many Cardinals fans that I know were rooting for the Cubs. Especially here where I live, there's a split between Cubs and Cardinals fans. So it gets very heated.
Yeah.
Most of them have been good. A few of them, not so much. But you're right. I think that, I hate to sound like a cliche Cubs fan, but I think next year, we'll be better. There's a good core of young kids. They'll get some good pitching, and I think we'll be back. I think this year was a surprise anyway, because, they were forecast to maybe make it to 500.
They weren't necessarily ready for all the success that they had this year, but the future looks bright. All right, so let's get into talking about this past episode of Survivor, where we saw Monica Padilla, first time that Bayon goes to tribal council, and the first time that they have to vote somebody off, and the first time an original Bayon person goes home, and it's Monica Padilla, somebody who wasn't very much on our radar from the viewing perspective, but I'm interested to hear your take on why Monica lost.
Well, first, I think we just need to celebrate because we don't have to talk about Anchor today.
Yeah, that was the biggest surprise of all, that they ultimately did not go to tribal council. We really thought that that was going to be an episode where it was going to be either a Woo, Abby Maria debate. And while we did see a little bit of them talking about like Tasha really is starting to lose her patience with Abby Maria, they did not go to tribal council. Actually came in first in that challenge with some help from Stephen Fishback. Yeah, but good for them.
Yeah, good for them and good for us, because we don't have to talk about them this week. So, yeah, what we do have to talk about, though, is Monica, who, first they had to remind us that she was on the show.
Yes.
And, but skipping to her final words, She said she didn't know what she could have done differently. Now, I would guess that by now she has an idea, but luckily you and I are here to help her out. So, the first thing I'll say is that despite what we saw on TV, which wasn't much, this was not about clams. So if it wasn't about clams, we have to figure out why did Monica lose?
So let's get into it. Rule number one you have is scheme and plot. Can we give Monica a thumbs up for her scheming and plotting?
I will say yes, perhaps to the surprise of those who only saw the TV show. But I suspect those people aren't listening now anyway. Because we didn't see it on TV. And that's why I like doing these discussions after more information is out. Because if we just had to rely on what was on the show, we'd be thinking that the only idea she had out there the whole time was the Women's Alliance. But that doesn't seem to be the case. You know, I mentioned the clams, and that was seemingly a minor tiff in what apparently was a lot of time spent between Monica and Kimmy. In fact, she said in interviews that she made an alliance with Kimmy on day one. She said she tried to protect Kimmy early on. She thought they were tight, but they were also the love tribe, so there weren't people openly aligning. But even with that in mind, she thought Kimmy was her, you know, one true friend. So then, after forming a bond with Kimmy, she said she aligned with Jeremy and then with Keith, and she trusted Steven because he was on the bottom of their original tribe with them. And this alliance, according to her, was supposed to go all the way to the end because she said she was, you know, trying to play an old school game. On top of that, she said that she made some pregame alliances, which didn't work out because in some cases, like with T-Bird, didn't make it on. And in other cases, they were on the other tribe.
You know, I thought that was pretty interesting when I asked Monica about who were the people you're talking to in the pregame. And it seemed like that Monica was talking with, you know, T-Bird, PG, Michaela, and, you know, I feel like there was somebody else, but it was like all the people that seemingly like Monica was fighting with for spots on the show. Like there was no scenario in which all the people that Monica was talking to were going to get on the season.
Yeah, I guess, you know, that's something I hadn't thought of, but it's a good point. You have to game the pregame.
Right. Like Jim Rice is like, okay, well, nobody's talking to me. And okay, I sort of get that because why are you going to make a pregame alliance with Jim Rice? Okay, if you say he's probably not going to be on the show, but like, why make pregame alliances with all the people that are probably like also on the fringe?
Even if those people do get on, you know, what are the odds that they're going to put them on the same tribe? If half of those people get on, they'll be split because they're in the same sort of demographic there.
But it seems like Monica, from almost even in the pregame, is thinking Women's Alliance. I got to stay tight with the women.
Right. And so she's thinking of pregame and endgame. And I guess the middle game the early game sort of didn't make it there.
Yeah.
So I'd say that with what she said regarding her supposedly solid alliance with, you know, to the end, it kind of conflicts with some of the other things that she said. And that would take us, I think, to the second rule.
Scheme and plot too much.
So Twitter was a very good source of information this week.
It always is.
Yeah, well, it always is now that they're allowed to talk again, you know. So Jeremy was asked why voting Monica out was smart. And he said he based it on who he could trust the most. Then he was further asked if he would have considered voting out Monica, even if Kimmy hadn't come to him and Steven. And he said yes. So some pretty interesting thoughts from him. Then someone argued with him, which I know is unheard of on Twitter. No arguments ever. Saying that Monica's loyalty was 100% with Bayonne, and she was just hinting to Kimmy that they should have had a women's alliance. Now, this person seems to have an in-depth knowledge of what Monica was thinking, but we'll put that aside. And, you know, Jeremy replied.
Was it at Monica Padilla 7?
No, it was not. It was okay. Not. I can't remember who it was, but I mean, you know, no one would ever create a false handle on Twitter either. So, but Jeremy replied and wondered if they should have waited until her hinting turned into blindsiding. So it's clear to me that Jeremy was worried about Monica scheming and plotting too much. And he was worried about it a lot more than, you know, we saw just because of this, you know, one incident. And he wasn't the only one, because Steven provided some information in his blog that coincided with some of the things that Monica said in her final words. Both in Steven's words and her own, she came in with the intent to play, and she intended to play hard, and she may have overdone it. So this is to the point that Steven called her, quote, transparently schemy. This is Steven calling her that. So not only did she suggest the Women's Alliance to Kimmy, which we saw, but she separately told Steven she wanted to make a big move, which he took to mean voting out Jeremy. And I had mentioned that she formed this alliance to the end with Jeremy, among others. So it's interesting that she would say these contradictory things.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, the Women's Alliance and everything. And I have to give props to Sarah Freeman, who wrote both for me and for you. And she said on Twitter, stop thinking about women's alliances.
Is that to us, the people talking about the show, or to Monica?
To Monica and to every contestant.
Here's what I think was going on here with Monica. I mean, did Monica really want a women's alliance? I don't know. I think she would have definitely been open to it, but I think she just wanted to try to come up with something for everybody. So when she's trying to work with Steven and Jeremy, she's probably not talking about women's alliance, but to Kimmy and Kelly, like, hey, women's alliance, I got to keep that going. And I think this is just born out of the environment that she came from in Survivor Samoa, where Russell is going around talking to everybody and he's got a different story for each person, and that's effective for him. And I think that Monica really came into this season saying, like, hey, this time around, I'm not going to just be the Monica that was sort of just like, you know, take it as it comes in Samoa. I've got to be much more of the mover and shaker that I ended up being towards the end, that I saw Russell have success with. And so I need to be talking game with people constantly. And I think it actually worked to her detriment.
Right, right. And like I said, she did say she came to play hard, and she may have played too hard. But here's one thing she said on one of those, you know, 10 things you need to know about Monica, things on CBS.com. She said that she was exposing her endgame too early and that she trusted Kimmy enough to talk about it at that point. So that suggests to me her endgame was, in fact, a women's alliance.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she tells Kimmy about this, and Kimmy doesn't like this endgame, and so reports it to their other allies, plus the stuff that Steven said. So you're right. I think that she was talking to everybody about something different, but at the same time, she's claiming in interviews that she had this core alliance. So it's contradictory, and I think that's what set off all the alarms in everyone's heads around her. And as a matter of fact, I think it set off those alarms enough to stoke this rumor that we've heard about them throwing the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we didn't see any video evidence of this. And I know you've already talked about this a little bit, but it is odd that Jeremy sat this one out. And going back to Twitter, someone asked Steven about the rumor, and he replied that throw is a strong word. Let's say we were comfortable losing. Oh, very coy, Steven. And speaking of coy, Jeremy was asked if he threw it. And he said he would never throw a challenge. In fact, he couldn't because he was sitting it out.
Hmm.
So my theory is that they threw it, but Steven never uttered those words on camera because he feared the wrath of Eliza. And, you know, the thing I find most amusing about the possibility that they threw the challenge is that Steven's oops moments might not have been a mistake, because he said online that Probst claimed it wasn't possible to hit another team's target. And he said that, you know, leading up to the challenge. And I could just imagine Steven doing it just to prove Jeff Probst wrong. But, in discussing all of this,
I was just to weigh in, I don't think that that's necessarily what happened. Like, I don't think that Steven did it on purpose to try to spite Jeff, because, I mean, Steven in his secret scene was talking about just like how terrible he was. And actually, it's funny that, like, Jeff was asked about it, about what happens if you hit the other tribe's target, and Jeff said it was impossible. But right. Jeff, in his interview with Dalton Ross, talked about it was almost like law of attraction, because Steven put that idea in his brain from before the challenge even started that he was going to do that. And that's why he ultimately did it, not as a sort of like conscious thing, but like a subconscious thing that he couldn't not do it at the point that he already started thinking about it. So I thought that was a very interesting commentary from Jeff.
Yeah, I like mine better, even though it's probably not true. I think mine's funnier. I could just say, well, let's see if Jeff's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, you know, whether or not that happened, which probably didn't, but, you know, I think the main point is whether they threw it, whether they didn't try too hard. The fact is something was going on there that they didn't mind losing Monica because they really did not trust her because of her over scheming.
No, I totally get that. And I think that she was somebody that I thought coming into this season, nobody was going to be worried about Monica. Nobody was going to be gunning for her. And somehow she schemed so much or came off as so schemey that people did worry about her when they had no reason to beforehand.
Right. I mean, you said, you know, leading up to this, that people take away from their winner. Well, not winner in this case, but, you know, people who they played with before. And, you know, I think she overcorrected, as you also talked about. You could either go in and play the same game or you could try to correct, and you may end up overcorrecting. And definitely when it came to scheming and plotting, she overcorrected.
All right. What about rule number three? Be flexible. Was Monica flexible enough?
Well, I'd say considering the discussion we had, I think it is pretty clear that she attempted to provide herself with flexibility, you know, with all these different possibilities that she was talking to. She was just looking at all these different options. Now, maybe she should have kept some of those options a little bit more to herself, even not telling the person who she thought was her closest ally, but at least she was looking. So that's more than we can say for some players.
And I think that she was actually probably more flexible when it came down to the vote in terms of voting for Kelly. I think that she was more flexible than we've seen other people, maybe probably even more so than PG, in terms of, like, she said, okay, fine, you guys want to vote for Kelly? I'll vote off Kelly. She did vote for Kelly as opposed to really trying to pound the table like, no, we have to go for Spencer.
Oh, that's a good point. I think the problem was in the lead-in, you know, that she may have, well, she did eventually capitulate, but I wonder how much debate there was beforehand that made it sound like she really didn't want to.
I don't sense that there was that much, because I feel like we would have seen it.
That's true. That's true. They may not have bothered because they didn't care whether she voted for Kelly or Spencer, and because they weren't. So,
yeah. All right. Rule number four is don't let your emotions control you. Did Monica do a good job of keeping her emotions in check?
Well, I think we're shooting in the dark a bit here because of how little we saw of her, but I don't get the sense that this was an issue. If anything, it's possible that Monica was blind to the possibility that Kimmy would turn on her because she felt that they had become fast friends. But I don't think this changed Monica's plans in any way. Could have been a minor blind spot, but other than that, I don't really see it as an issue.
I don't think that being overly emotional played a part at all in what Monica was doing. If anything, maybe being more emotional might have helped her, because it seems like she was just really game focused, game, to the point where she told me in our exit interview that when Andrew told his very touching story, she didn't even hear it because she was too busy thinking about the game.
Well, she should have suggested to him afterwards, I wonder if Jeremy's going to look for immunity idols.
No, she should not. She should not. But she did say she started crying after when she saw everybody else crying. So I guess she was at least empathic enough to do that.
Yeah. But, you know, also maybe there's she was sitting on the bottom with Steven. So, you know, the bottom people just couldn't understand that awesome story by Savage, I think is what that shows us.
All right. Rule number five is pretend to be nice. Play the social game. Keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourself. Did Monica do a good job with this one?
Well, the first thing I think of here is the clam incident, because, well, that's what we saw on TV. She said, you know, as we discussed earlier, it wasn't a big deal in her mind, though she does admit she was a bit pissed off. Now, is it possible that Kimmy saw how pissed off she was and that helped her decide to rat her out to Jeremy and Steven? It's possible. I tend to doubt it. So, you know, I just don't think there's really anything there.
You know, I actually disagree with that. I feel like in my mind, and this is coming out of my own experience in Survivor All-Stars, where I don't feel like I made too many major mistakes with Survivor All-Stars. Like there was like a bunch of things that I just did not do, like little things that just sort of like started to pile up where people were starting to get like annoyed with me, where I was not like a loved person of that tribe that I was in. And I remember just getting into like little, like sort of like tiffs, and not even so much with Rob, but it was more like with Amber and Alicia. And like, I feel like when we got the rice and we got like a, like this treasure chest with rice in it, and I was like saying like, we should be eating bigger portions of the rice. And they were like, no, we got to make this rice last for 39 days because we were in Australia. And so this was more Amber, but she was like, no, that they, we ran out of rice and we had no more rice. And I was much more like the Kimmy saying like, hey, we should eat. We don't know what's going to happen. There could be a tribe swap. There could be, you know, who knows who's going to be here. And so, but it was just like getting into like where I should have been. And if I played again, I would just not push anybody. Like if it's not a life or death matter, like I would just like go with the flow. And so you got to avoid those like tiny confrontations because it leaves people with a bad taste in their mouth about you. So I don't know if Kimmy had any sort of strong feelings about Monica before that, but just like butting heads over something minor, you just like in that environment, you come away from it where Kimmy's like, you know, Monica is a real a-hole about this.
See, it was food again also.
It is food. And it's really the dumbest things that you sort of like, you know, get into it with these people. And then it just ends up where people end up having like sort of like this like little bit of like this snowball, which just keeps rolling down the hill of that they have some animosity towards you and it festers.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up, you know, why Rob lost on All Stars here.
I bet you didn't have that in there.
Well, I'm looking here. I'm not sure that they only exist in the Google archive at this point.
Jeff Farner had it right.
I've got to kiss their asses.
That's what you have to do.
Until one of them bites him on the ass.
Yeah.
You know? One just bit my ass.
But yeah, you should not be getting into an argument with anybody like, oh, Kimmy, that's a great idea. Let me help you carry all these clams.
Yeah, but it comes down to the same debate, which is the funny thing, is eat now or save for later. And I'm firmly on your side of the eat now.
Of course I'm right. It doesn't mean anything. I was right then. It doesn't matter. If Amber and Alicia said I was wrong, then I was wrong.
Well, clearly. Yeah. I can't find it immediately, so I'll have to go back and do some research and let you know, if that was part of the reason. But I think mostly it was the be too much of a threat at the time.
Well, that happens to be our next rule that we're talking about, rule number six. Don't be too much of a threat. Was Monica too much of a threat?
I would say yes, in terms of what the majority felt going forward, that she was too much of a threat. Now, we've already heard from Jeremy and Steven about it. And beyond that, Steven also said Monica was a potential danger going forward. So he specifically said that. So they decided to vote out their flipper before she had a chance to flip. And it is a good point because, you know, sometimes you don't know who your flipper is until it's too late. In this case, she was giving off enough danger signals that they could see it coming. And he dedicated an explanation in his blog to how a flipper not only takes away one of your numbers, but gives a number to your opposition. And getting rid of her now got rid of that future threat.
Mm-hmm.
So she was not the same type of threat as we had talked about early on, and as you were in All Stars, you know, that it was come in thinking, oh, Monica's a big threat. We've got to, you know, target her. She built up her own threat, caused it herself.
Yeah. Steven, I believe in his blog, compared her to Erin in Survivor Token Chains for the Timbira tribe, where what if they got rid of the person who was going to flip against them later in the game? And so he looked at it that way. I'm not sure necessarily if this was the case, but in their minds, that is how they were looking at it.
Right. And it goes back to all the discussions she had And then people talked and compared notes, and therefore she became transparently schemy. She was looked at as someone who was, you know, potentially going to go to the other side. Now, the thing was, she was not Bayon strong because she was on the bottom there. So if they had all gotten back together again, she was not going to be part of Savage's alliance, but neither was Steven. And now we have to wonder if Jeremy ever was either. You know, that we'll have to see. But even in their sub-alliance of the bottom dwellers, they just didn't feel they could trust her.
Rule number 7 is vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. David, where are we in the scheme of things? Are we still voting out the weak?
I think on this tribe, we definitely are. I mean, it's their first time going to tribal council. They don't know how much longer they'll be in this tribe format. And even beyond that, well, you know, okay, there's a couple different types of weaknesses, as we've discussed before. So was she weak at the challenges?
Yes.
Yes. And but was challenge weakness an issue with this vote? And I would say no, because you don't potentially throw a challenge to get rid of someone who's going to lose challenges for you. So I think she fell into
the
category.
Well, hold on a second. I actually do think it was a factor, because I think that it really came down to they were going to get rid of somebody who was not a big contributor in the challenges. Like, they weren't talking about getting rid of Jeremy, and Spencer really wasn't too much on the table for them because he's been a contributor. So I think if you look at all of these votes so far that have come in the post swap, or at least other than Vetus, I think everybody here is somebody who was not a factor in the challenges.
You're right. You're right. And they might have considered that, but I don't think it was the primary way they saw her as being weak. I think they saw her as being weak because she caused divisions in the tribe that would weaken the overall group dynamic, especially compared to Spencer and Wigglesworth. Because, you know, going back to Twitter again, following up on that Jeremy Twitter discussion, the same person continued to argue that Jeremy should have voted out Spencer instead because Wigglesworth's loyalty is also with Bayon. Again, they have an incredible insight into what all these people are thinking. And Jeremy...
David, are you implying that this is some sort of like Monica Padilla alter ego on Twitter? Because you said earlier that you thought this was somebody that people do make up fake Twitter handles, and now you're saying that this person has a lot of insight into the mindset of other players.
No, that was the first one was a joke, and the second was sarcasm. So okay. I think they're just a troll, personally, or someone who thinks they know a lot more than they do. And you know, Jeremy showed a great deal of patience in continuing to respond to this person.
Yes,
and said that Spencer showed loyalty and had no one left on Takeo to go back to. And then, you know, Steven also said in his blog that he saw Spencer as a good ally and Wigglesworth as at least part of the cohesive group. And I think those last two words are the key, the cohesive group. They were both part of that dynamic. Monica was weakening it, at least in the minds of what everybody saw, because she was trying to cause divisions. So I think the challenge weakness, it was there, but I feel like it was a side effect. Like, I mean, it may have been something that could have saved her if she had been a challenge goddess, if she had just been winning every challenge for them.
If she was Joe.
Right. Then they might have had to rethink it. But the fact that she was weakening the group dynamic and was weak at challenge made it easy to lose her.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That, and it's probably, you know, an 80-20 thing, 80% where it's that they didn't trust her, and then that last 20 was like, yeah, she's not really helping us in the challenges either.
Right.
Okay, so then in terms of the appendix, do whatever it takes to get idols, I think she seemed to be at least part of that idol search, and you would think that that part of Survivor Samoa would be very sort of like sewn into her DNA as a Survivor player, but ultimately looking for the idol did not seem to factor in any way.
Right. And even if she had it, I think that she could have had it in her pocket and she would not have used it. She was completely blindsided.
Good point. All right. And then we talk about the final tribal council in the second part of the appendix, but it is not relevant here.
No. So we look back, and you know, I want to also go back to some of Monica's own words. When she had her torch stuffed, She said, as I mentioned, she didn't know what she could have done differently. But then in her day after video, she said she played hard, maybe too hard. And we've heard that already. She said she gave trust, but didn't get that trust back from those she tried to align with. She said she was, you know, perhaps too honest with Stephen and Jeremy, and Kelly wasn't really playing the game, which, you know, that's not the first person who would say that. Yeah. But the thing is, she did have some hints about what happened, and they were leading her in the right direction. What I think is interesting is she said she gave trust, but didn't get trust back from those she tried to align with. I'm not sure how she settles those things in her mind, because she says she gave trust, but then when she was talking to each of her different allies, she was suggesting voting out some of her allies. So maybe the trust she gave was that she trusted them not to talk to each other.
I think she's specifically talking about Kimmy. I think she gave trust to Kimmy and she did not get trust back from Kimmy. I think that's probably, if we're going to read between the lines, I think that's what she's saying.
Right. But at the same time, you know, she didn't prove herself trustworthy. So I think Monica's own words were leading towards our answer here, because she schemed and plotted too much. I think that is clear. And that made the others in her own alliance distrust her. She caused a rift in the group dynamic. She made herself a threat going forward, the threat of the possibility of flipping and turning against them. Her own allies couldn't trust her. And that's a recipe for disaster on Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also why Monica lost.
In terms of the women's alliance thing, do you think for Monica, it was something that she was trying to actively make happen, or it was just the sort of thing where she just wanted to have the pieces in place where down the line, if there were women in place, that they could just pull the trigger on this women's alliance?
I think it was a combination. She was planting the seed. She was planting a Russell seed for the future. You know, hey, Kimmy, keep this in mind. This is what we want going forward. But when you're doing that and you've already made a quote unquote to the end alliance with some people who were not women, well, one of those has to give. And Kimmy clearly felt more comfortable with the original to the end alliance than she did trying to go with a women's alliance.
Something else that we didn't talk about during the week. Do you think this was a good move for Kimmy?
Time will tell, but I think it is. I think if nothing else, she certainly proved her loyalty to Jeremy and Stephen. She ratted out her closest friend on the tribe. Well, at least Monica thought she was the closest friend. I would say going forward, definitely not. And that has to prove to Jeremy and Stephen that, hey, look, I'm with you. I'm trustworthy. Bring me along with you.
I think what's interesting about this here, and again, I was so impressed by Kimmy and this side of her that we never saw before. But if you're Kimmy, what would be the worst part? I guess maybe is Kimmy feeling like she's tighter with Kelly Wigglesworth than she is with Monica? Because for Kimmy, I mean, why get rid of somebody who is probably more loyal to other people in the game? Whereas if you keep Monica around, sure, Monica has that women's alliance thing in the back pocket, and also the buy-on thing is still, okay, that's another person that I know I'm ahead of in the pecking order. So if you're Kimmy, don't you have more outs, to bring it back to your other love, poker, where if you keep Monica in the game, like, okay, maybe we catch the women's alliance draw maybe after the merge. Maybe we catch the buy-on thing, and here's somebody else who I've been working with since day one. Doesn't that give Kimmy another option?
It does, but I get the sense that even though Monica felt she was super tight with Kimmy, obviously that was not returned. So I feel like Kimmy feels tighter with Stephen and Jeremy. Now, we don't have a whole lot of evidence other than the fact that she ran to them and told them what Monica was saying. But I think that is a big chunk of evidence. And if she plans to, you know, ride those horses to the end, she certainly doesn't want to risk being tarred with the brush of a flipper. The Kelly situation, it just seems like no one feels like Kelly is playing. And so they may not necessarily be thinking that Kelly has allies anywhere, because an ally would suggest that she's playing the game. And it feels like nobody thinks Kelly is playing. I think that Kimmy might have been thinking the same thing. Like, okay, she'll just stay here on our tribe and be a loyal member until we're done with her. I don't think they believe she's going to go back to anyone else because they just don't see her as being that type of player. And we also have to remember, and you brought this up in either voicemails or with T-Bird, or maybe with Josh, I don't know, that they were only with their original tribes for two votes. Mm-hmm. They've already been longer with the new tribes than with the original tribes. And I think in a new player season, you do have a lot more of that initial tribe bonding than you do when everyone knows each other already. So I think that's why we're seeing a lot of mixing and matching when it comes to that. People are not necessarily as, you know, super glued to their original tribe as you might normally have when they've already spent more time with the new people.
That's a really good point, because when we start to look then at people like Tasha and Wu, like Tasha and Wu already spent more time together in Survivor Kageyan than they did in this game entirely. So you have those sort of bonds also.
Right, right. And we saw that on the other tribe where they made a to the end alliance also. And they even involved Keith. Keith was so happy. he does seem to have a failing memory, as you pointed out, that, yeah, they did make a plan with you, Keith.
Yeah. A couple times people tried to work with Keith, but it did not work out. Okay. No. So, all right. So now we know why Monica lost. Let's start to look ahead. And so what is your sense of what's going to happen this week?
Well, I know that there are a lot of spoilers out there, and I am happy to say that I have managed to avoid all of them. So, obviously, from what we saw, you know, it seems to me just from the coming next week that there is some sort of injury.
Mm-hmm.
And who it may be, I personally have no idea. I think that about 50% of the people listening to this may, from what I've seen discussed, in terms of, well, everybody knows. Well, no, I don't, and I'm going to keep it that way. I also suspect there will be a vote in addition to it, just because there has to be an episode with a double elimination in here somewhere. This would seem to be a good time for it if there is a medevac. As for who it would be, well, it raises some interesting questions, because I think you were thinking that they would recombine into two tribes at 14.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a medevac, well, then they're down to 14. Do they recombine after the medevac, or do they just go on like normal? Or does the medevac happen afterwards? I don't know. There's so many different possibilities. And it comes back to what we were discussing before, which is they normally let us know when there's going to be a drop your buffs moment. And I don't think we've seen that. Although, like I said, since I've been steadfastly avoiding everything, I guess it is possible. You tell me, has there been a commercial with a drop your buffs moment?
I'm going to abstain from saying one way or the other.
Okay. Okay. Rob, you were spoiled.
I watched commercials.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I don't think that's necessarily, you know, you're just watching TV. I'm not going on to like some website or anything that, you know, if it comes from CBS, then I'm of the school. It's not a spoiler.
Right, right.
It's like, are the previews for the next episode a spoiler?
I would normally say no. Like if I were, you know, posting about it on Twitter or Facebook. But sometimes, yeah, CBS really does screw up and put in stuff that is spoilery.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I guess I'll just leave that open-ended and say I really don't know what to expect next week. Because, you know, I mean, if we go back to what we were thinking before, if they keep these same tribes, I really do think Angkor was lucky to win. I think it was a challenge that was suited to them being able to not lose it. But if you go back to the type of challenges that they normally have, I just get the feeling we're going back to them losing again.
Hey, give me a prediction for who are we talking about next week?
Abby Maria.
Abby Maria. Okay. Very exciting stuff. We will be back with the Survivor Know-It-Alls to talk about everything that happens this Wednesday night after the episode. Plus, I will be then speaking with whoever is eliminated from the show on Thursday, and then we'll do our big Survivor recap. Kenny Huang Plus, Matt Cerrone from MetsBlog.com is going to be doing the voicemails. He's a longtime listener to RHAP. And so we're going to be doing all that on Thursday. So lots of fun stuff coming up on the podcast this week. Again, we're looking forward to hearing your comments. And of course, you can subscribe to Rob's podcast at robhiswebsite.com/iTunes and follow David Bloomberg on Twitter. He is at David Bloomberg. David, anything else?
I think we need a hashtag.
Oh, what's the hashtag?
Well, I think transparently schemey is a little too long, so maybe just schemey.
Schemey, okay.
S-C-H-E-M-E-Y.
Good stuff. All right, have a good one, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.